The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
Is there any member of the Arizona Diamondbacks who hasn't been injured at some point this season? I'm Steve Zinsmeister, and with me today, as always, it's Derek Montilla and Cody Fincher as well on the Ain't No Fang Podcast. Is it just me, or does it seem like everyone on this team has either been injured, is injured, or might get injured in the near future? Knock on wood. Bear, another major injury, this time, I don't know if we can call it major, but as Drubal Cabrera is a major part of this team this season, Cabrera goes down last night. We got Zach Gallen, who's on the IL again. Christian Walker's out. It seems like they're all happening at once. Am I wrong?
Yeah, and what you just said also applies to the coaching staff. They have two coaches that have been injured this year, too. Jeez. Dave McKay fell down in the dugout, and what, he lacerated his spleen or something. Darnell Coles, their hitting coach, tore his Achilles. Like, it's been everybody. But, yeah, Cabrera probably, I don't know if it was the best decision for a 36-year-old guy like him to try and steal second, but he had it stolen. He had it stolen. I'll give that to him, but His hammy gave out halfway there. But hopefully it's not too bad. They didn't really say anything last night. It's just a strained hamstring. But the Gallen one hurts a lot because he was pitching pretty well. And it's the elbow. It's a strain in the part of his UCL. So whenever you hear that, you fear the worst. But it sounds like he's not going to need surgery. So that's good news. And then Christian Walker just re-injured that oblique, it sounds like. So who knows how long he's going to be out there. But yeah, it's they have to be, the Diamondbacks have to be one of the, if not the most injury-plagued team this year. It's been pretty crazy how much they've had to deal with.
Could you even say they've been snake-bitten, Bear?
Oh, I see what he did there.
Boo! Boo!
No, Cabrera's spirit was willing, but his body was not. That was sad to see, and it was pretty heartbreaking, kind of, to see the amount of pain he was in, to see him kind of like rolling around in agony. It's actually good to hear it's just a strained hamstring and not anything more serious, because it definitely looked like it might have been, you know, career threatening with how he went down. And he was going to steal that base, Bear, so let's not put that on how old he is.
I said that. I admit he had it stolen.
I think the thing about Cabrera really has been his versatility, right? He hasn't been, you know, 100% the best offensive player on the team, but he has contributed offensively every game he's been in just about, and he has been solid on the field wherever he plays. It really is a blow to this infield that has already experienced so many injuries to lose somebody that can play, daily like he has been. I think that up until this injury, and I mean, maybe including the injury, you can't really say too much about the other acquisitions during the offseason, but he was their best acquisition with how much he's contributed to the success of this team.
Which is interesting, because as Drubal Cabrera has built his career on sort of becoming one of the more, I don't want to say best hitters in baseball, because he's certainly not talent-wise, but he's one of the most reliable hitters in baseball. We talked about when they signed him, the statistics were something like he was like 7th in RBIs in Major League Baseball since he got traded to the Nationals in 2019. So, I mean, this is one of the most reliable bats in the league. And to be signed to a team like the Diamondbacks, where he wasn't assigned a position initially, he was just kind of, okay, he's going to play some first, he's going to play some third, he's capable of playing second. Hell, he played shortstop coming up into the league. I would never expect him to actually have to do that, but I'm sure in a pinch he at least knows the position and has done it in the past. It's remarkable to me how quickly he developed into a team leader, both as a productive hitter and as a veteran member of this team. So I guess that plays a role into it. But when it comes to Zach Gallen, is it more concerning, Bear, because we already saw Gallen go down a couple of weeks ago and he already kind of spent his time with that hairline fracture? And now this, does that kind of compound it, or do we handle it completely separate of the issue?
Well, it's always a concern for me when you hear UCL because, you know, that obviously coincides with Tommy John surgery most of the time. But from everything I've seen and read and heard is that he's not going to need surgery. So that's good news, but you still have to figure that he's going to be out for quite a bit of time because probably they're going to shut him down. He's not going to throw a ball for a while. And then when he does get cleared to resume baseball activities, he has to build up his arm back to where he can start games. And who knows how long that'll take him. But like I heard on one of the shows that they were kind of estimating probably not seeing Zach Gallen until the beginning of June, just because of all the things that they have to go through to get back into baseball shape and the pitcher having to get build back his arm strength and all that. But yeah, it's concerning. Anytime you hear that those three letters UCL, I mean, I can't help but go, oh no, what's going to happen? And you know, you never know how the rehab is going to go. So yeah, it's just, it sucks because he already missed the first 2 weeks or so of the season after he got hurt swinging a bat, and now it's his elbow. So it's just, yeah, it sucks for sure.
I would think that 2 to 3 weeks would be a timeline that you'd be okay with, Derek. What's your level of concern, 1 to 10, on Zach Gallen?
To be honest, my concern's a 10. And the reason why is because it just kind of reminds me of when your car starts breaking down. You know, sometimes it's one thing breaking that then puts additional stress on the rest of the car that then causes other things to start going. I just don't know because I'm not a medical expert, but I just feel like the microfracture and the, you know, everything that he's kind of gone through is might be related in some way, you know, just the stress of the microfracture and then that putting extra stress on his elbow or whatever. It just seems like there's a possibility like this came because of him returning too soon from that microfracture injury. I am concerned because Gallen is by far one of the most talented pitchers that the Diamondbacks have on their roster and probably the most talented player, period. I'd put him right up there with Cattell. I don't want to see him go through Tommy John. I don't want to see him have any kind of setbacks in his career. If it means that he misses more time than this, if it means that they have to extend the 10-day DL or IL, you know, once or twice, give him that additional time, I'm fine with that. I want them to take all the time that he needs to get back and get back 100%. Oddly enough, this NL West due to injuries specifically is completely up for grabs right now. We have the Giants somehow distancing themselves from the pack. We have the Dodgers in third place, just a couple of games above the D-backs. And the Dodgers have had their nightmare of a season with injuries as well. This isn't just something that the Diamondbacks right now are going through, but like you alluded to, it's not even just their players. It's even their pitching staff. They literally seem to be just have every bit of adversity being thrown in their way, especially when it comes to injuries. Yet with all of that adversity, they're still what, three games now out of five behind 500 and in fourth place. Like, and they're not that far back from the division. It makes it hard to not, you know, want to rush Gallen back. It makes it hard not to want to get these guys back from injury as soon as possible. There feels like this season that was already gifted to the Dodgers or the Padres is completely changed. And that's how baseball goes. That's how any sport goes. You can never, you know, predict how the future is going to go. And you can never predict how injuries are going to change things drastically for one team or another. The Diamondbacks, I mean, are easily outperforming the expectations considering all of these injuries that we've discussed that they've gone through. You said earlier, Steve, that it was all at once. It's not even been all at once. It's just been peppered throughout. I think they maybe had one game where they actually had their starting lineup all available for a game. I don't even think that happened, if I'm mistaken. I could be wrong. But they haven't had like every single one of their players healthy this season to even have their actual starting predicted starting lineup in out there. It's been a terrible season for that. Yet they, you know, here we are where they're still in it. I want Gallen to be healthy and right, and I don't care how long that takes.
And they've had guys go on the IL multiple times now, Cole Calhoun's been on it twice. Zach Gallen's been on it twice. Christian Walker's been on it twice. So it's like, it's guy. It's not just like, oh, now this different guy's injured. This different guy's injured. It's, they've had three very key players to their team go on the injured list multiple times. And
when Ahmed did during spring training,
that's right. Yep. Ahmed. Yep.
You know, Cattell's another guy that could happen too. So I'm glad they're taking their time with him.
They've had three of their best hitters on the injured list for a majority of this season with Cattell, Walker, and Calhoun.
Talk to me, Bear, about the injury specifically to Christian Walker. You mentioned he's been on the IL twice already, hasn't really even had that opportunity to get things going. But there's an interesting aspect of it because Pavin Smith has emerged. I wouldn't say he's been great, but Pavin Smith has certainly emerged as a player that's capable of backing him up. He's been playing outfield, but he also plays first base. Is that a different kind of injury in your head? Like, when you're looking long term about these injuries and who gets roles on this squad, is it different at first base because you have confidence in Pavin Smith, whereas in center field, Cattell's been out for weeks, and they've tried Varsho, they've tried Smith, they've tried LeCastro, they've tried Heath. So they got a lot of different options there. Tell me about first base and how you're feeling about that, Bear.
Well, you obviously are concerned with Christian Walker. It's, he re-injured the same oblique, I think, that he had injured before. But with that position, I'm more confident in the backups there because Pavin Smith has been so good for this team since he's kind of been thrust into the opportunities because of all the injuries. He's played a decent right field, but first base is his natural position. That's what he played when they drafted him, and that's what he was the majority of what he's been playing in the minor leagues. So I'm confident in that position. Pavin Smith just looks like a professional hitter right now. He takes a lot of pitches and he works the count. He doesn't really swing at bad pitches either. So he's done really well. I went to the game on Monday and the bleacher creatures out in right field were like chanting his name the whole game because he was interacting with them. So I think he's quickly becoming a fan favorite with this fan base too. But yeah, he reminds me a lot of, just with his swing, of like a Freddie Freeman type of player, a big left-handed hitter with kind of a weird short swing, but it works, and he works the count, and he's been playing really well. So first base, yeah, you'd like to have Christian Walker because, you know, Christian Walker's always got that threat of the home run. He's got a lot of power, and he's a good defender at first base as well. But I'm excited to see Pavin Smith get more opportunities at first base for sure.
Steve, let me give you some numbers real fast on Pavin Smith.
Please do.
Batting leadoff, he's hitting nearly 300 at 296 with an OPS of 0.822.
Pretty good.
And that's been 19 starts that he has played or batted at leadoff. So it seems like they like him right now, batting leadoff. I think that he's matured quickly. You know, I think that there was some times where, especially with young baseball players, once they get to the majors, it's discouraging. It's discouraging to see them not come up and have the same success that they might have had in the minors or not live up to, you know, expectations. When you're a high draft pick in any sport, I think it's expected you're going to be good when we see you. And baseball humbles even the highest of draft picks once they get to the majors. I think he's done a great job transitioning and making the changes. One thing we've talked about a lot is getting better, you know, and that's one thing that we're seeing from a lot of these young guys. Even if they're still struggling, they seem to be making changes. They seem to be trying new things. And in Pavin Smith's case, it's working. Wyatt Matheson, however, didn't really show improvements, and they recently DFA'd him. So the Diamondbacks aren't really taking a lot of time with young players if they're not showing improvements. But I really think that Smith has done an outstanding job of contributing to this team. You know, I didn't expect this much out of him this soon.
It's worth noting too, Pavin Smith, I believe, was the first round draft pick made by Mike Hazen when he came over.
That is correct.
So Pavin Smith is kind of showing you the dividends of the fruits of your labor, essentially, right? And a lot of GMs, especially in medium or small markets, I think you could probably consider this a medium baseball market, although it's a large city. Most GMs don't get the opportunity to stick around long enough to see the fruits of their labor, so to speak. So it's pretty cool to see Pavin Smith come through in that way. I would mention, too, Josh Rojas, who was pretty hot there for a week or two. And it feels like nobody on this team really has like a set position they play. Everybody kind of moves around based on matchups. Right. But Josh Rojas has kind of established himself a little bit in the last couple of weeks. And Josh Rojas was also a big Mike Hazen acquisition where Mike made it very clear, we're not making this Greinke deal without Josh Rojas. And even the president of the Astros at the time was like, who the hell is Josh Rojas and why is that holding up the deal?
That's my favorite story from that trade.
Yeah, and here he is now kind of establishing himself. So what have you seen, Derek, from Josh Rojas specifically in the last couple of weeks?
He's really turned his offense around. I think that all season long, you know, he's never been terrible at any position he's played. He's had a bad night here or there. Of course, he's not going to be as good as Nick Ahmed playing shortstop sometimes. We're not going to see the same amazing plays that we see out of Cattell at second. He's done a good job, though, of being out there and being a great defender. And the thing I've been most impressed about, though, has been his turnaround at the plate. I mean, I think at one point he was hitting below 200, and now he's got a 500 slugging percentage with a 276 batting average. I was looking at his numbers when he was at the plate last night, and I was really impressed by what he's just, you know, the way he's turned it around. He's now right up there with being one of the best hitters on the team. And that wasn't too long ago that we were talking about how bad Rojas looked coming out of spring break or spring training.
Speaking of second base, Bear, look into your crystal ball, or maybe it's a Magic 8-Ball. I don't know. Look into your Magic 8-Ball and tell me, are we getting Cattell Marte back anytime soon?
It sounds like we're going to. From what has been said by Torrey Lovello and everything, it sounds like he's pretty close. It also sounds like he'll need to go on a rehab assignment. Cattell Marte recently said in a Zoom press conference that he doesn't feel like he needs to go on a rehab assignment for the to get at bats because he has been hitting off of guys at the alternate site, which he considers major league pitching. But I believe they want to see him run the bases and play center field first and do more high intensity running on that hamstring before they bring him back. But it sounds like, I would think in the next week or so, we would see Cattell Marte back. And then the question is, when he comes back, is he automatically your center fielder again? I know he's probably the best center fielder you have, but with that hamstring injury, would it be wiser? And I'm stealing this from someone I saw on Twitter, and I completely agree with it. Would it be wiser to bring Cattell Marte back and play him at second base? So you're limiting the amount of ground he has to cover running out in center field. And then in center field, you just play guys like, you know, Dalton Varsho, Pavin Smith, and Tim LeCastro. I tend to agree with that, bringing Marte back and playing him at second base, just, you know, so you're not right away, you know, putting a lot of pressure on his hamstring again. But that's just me. I never really liked Cattell Marte in center field anyway. I don't think he's a bad center fielder. I just know that he's had hamstring problems, and the amount of ground you have to run and cover out in center field is a lot, and he has
Have we been having this conversation for a long time? I feel like we've had this
It's like 2 years.
Forever. I felt like that one of the reasons why we said during the offseason and maybe even last year why we didn't want Cattell in center field was a probability of injury, right? We would rather he was at second just to lower that chance. We need him in too many other ways than to have him out at center field. I don't know what the statistics are as far as, you know, center field or how much that puts on you as an athlete. I don't know how much that impacts, you know, coming back from an injury, but I feel like what you're saying is 100% right. And I feel like what you're saying is been the whole reason why we wanted him at second, you know, the just the athleticism it takes to play at center field can seems like it can take a toll, especially at Chase Field on the turf, you know. And I don't know. It just seems like it would be a natural fit for him to go back into second base. The loss of Asdrubal Cabrera limits their versatility on the infield. Yeah, so yeah. We need Escobar to go back to third, and we need probably Pavin Smith to play first. I don't hate that infield, though, with Nick Ahmed at shortstop and those guys where they're at. That seems like a pretty set infield. The only question mark is the outfield, and I've seen LeCastro do a great job playing center field, so I don't know. I mean, I think the biggest problem, again, is that the more that you start setting guys in these positions, the less versatility you have as a team to bring them in to play a key role later in games like LeCastro can.
Yeah, and that plan that Bear laid out there for playing Marte at second makes sense to me. I also, in the back of my head, I have confidence that the organization wouldn't bring their best player back unless he was able to go 100% at the position that they want him at. So mm-hmm. I would think by the time they bring him back, they'll be comfortable with him playing center field. It won't be like his first game back will be the first time that he's in center field again. You know what I mean? Like they would warm him up to it so you wouldn't have to do it in game. But again, your process makes complete sense to me, Bear. So we'll see what happens there. I do want to mention this before we finish up for the day. Madison Bumgarner has really turned a corner in the last handful of starts, certainly. I mean, we're talking like historic Diamondback-type numbers. Obviously, it's much better than the alternative. It's much better than what we've seen in the first season and a half, or, well, season and a month, I guess, of Madison Bumgarner as a Diamondback. Has he turned that corner, Bear, where you are now confident that Madison Bumgarner is back to being the ace of old?
Well, I don't know if I'm confident he's the San Francisco crazy mad bum again, but he has turned some kind of corner. I believe, if I'm counting correctly, he's had five straight starts of giving up one or less runs. Like, that's really good. And he's not walking guys, really. I'm counting on the fly here. Two combined walks in those five starts, his last five starts. Like, something has flipped with Madison Bumgarner, and it was kind of weird. He got asked post game. I think I remember who asked the question, but they asked him, like, what's caused you to flip that switch to being good again?
Why are you good?
Yeah, and he's like, well, he said something like, yeah, I've been able to flip the switch, but I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, which yeah. Everyone's like, what the heck does that mean? But just my best guess is I think they were throwing way too many analytics and numbers at him, and the game plan was kind of not what he's used to. So he was probably following that game plan and it wasn't working. So, and then they've talked about simplifying stuff with Madison Bumgarner. So it sounds like they've gone back to just him feeling the game and him kind of determining what the game plan is out there as the game is going along, and it's working. He's been so good. He struck out 9 guys his last start. When's the last time he struck out 9 batters? I don't even know. Like, and the velocity seems to be back. He touched in his last start against the Marlins this week, he was touching 93 miles an hour. That's good enough for me. That's more than good enough for me.
More than good. He's actually been historic. Over those last 5 starts the Bears talking about, he has a 0.47 whip, the lowest whip by an NL pitcher over a 5-start span in a season since Pete Alexander had a 0.42 over 5 starts in 1915.
Wow.
1915. Wow. Almost, like, that's over 100 years. Yeah. That is 106 years, boys. So I can say confidently that whatever has changed has been very beneficial to Madison. And if it really comes down to him being more comfortable because you're not throwing as many analytics in his direction, that makes all the sense in the world. Bumgarner does not strike me as the kind of guy that will not do what his coach says, but Bumgarner also strikes me as the kind of guy that if you were to ask him how long you cooked a steak for, he'll go, I'll touch it. Like, that would be, you'd be like, wait, should I flip it at 8 minutes? He's like, I don't know. Just feel it. I mean, right. You know, it's go down to your hand and touch parts of your thumb and then touch the meat. And then that's when it's done. That's when it's done. I don't use time. You know, he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that can stick to something like analytics, but those analytics, if given to him and driven home that he needs to follow them, could just be all in his head. You know what I mean?
He reminds me of my grandmother when on her old recipe cards, my mom has, it just says like a pinch of this.
Yeah.
Or like, yeah. You eyeball it. How much you put in that, grandma? I don't know. Just this much. I don't know. Whatever. It's the same type of stuff. Like, it's just, it's all feel.
We're going to have kids that are brought up in this world of analytics, and all of that is going to mean the world to them. And it's not to say that they don't have their place. I'm not going to be dumb baseball guy and say, oh, no, that's all numbers and nerd stuff. No, I mean, there's very good. That's the reason why the shift is working so well this season and batters are, you know, befuddled by it, is because they can literally look at a guy's statistics and his tendencies and be like, wow, at 0.002% of the time he hits it between third and second, the rest of the 99.8% he hits it this way. You know, that all that stuff matters and I think has its place. I just don't think it has its place with someone like Madison Bumgarner. He's too old school. It's not his way of doing things. And, you know, it's like me trying to do my daughter's math. It's a nightmare. You know, it's just not, I'm too old to learn that way of doing math.
Yeah. That's her fault for coming to you on that.
No, it absolutely is. She comes to me and she's like, what? I'm like, no, do not ask me this. If you want a bad grade, you ask me this, but
you're like, when do they start putting letters with the numbers? That's weird.
Yeah,
just,
weird.
Don't even get me started.
Math is different these days.
Number bonds, and don't get me started on the way that you have to show your work. It's,
I had enough problems with long division.
All right, so that Mad Bum reminds Cody of his grandmother. That's what I got out of that conversation.
Yes.
Very old school, man.
Cooking beef with your hands.
Before we wrap up, I do want to finish up with the probably the biggest news of the day, and that's that today is Ketel Marte bobblehead day, isn't it?
That is right.
Wow.
I'm going to the game. I'm going to get one.
Yeah.
I'm going to the game to cover it, but I probably won't get one because they don't give us stuff anymore.
So here's the question, Bear. Are you trying to get the right-handed one or the left-handed one?
Mm. I like whatever one has the red jersey on it. I don't remember what hand that is. I think it's the right-handed one.
See, I think Ketel is better as a hitter right-handed, if I remember right. So, yes. I don't know. That's where I would go. I would go right-handed.
I just want one. That's all.
You don't care which one. Are you guys going to try to get both? You going to try to like lobby people for theirs so you can collect both?
Well, I don't know, because they're giving them away all weekend. It's not just today. So.
Okay. It starts today.
Gotcha. Yeah.
All right.
Which is a cool way to do some of their promotions. They've released their schedule and they got a couple of other promotions coming out where they're going to have them throughout the weekend. And
I've got
like that. I feel like it makes it a little bit more, better chance for you to get one.
I've got 30 seconds, Derek. Give me your favorite promotions that the D-backs are doing this week or this year.
What it is? It's the fact that they're doing a Christian Skywalker bobblehead for Star Wars Day. That's what it is.
Finally.
Someone over there listens.
I know. I came up with that. Like, when was that? Like a year ago? 2 years ago?
I think 2 years ago. I think you were mad that they weren't doing it as the Star Wars. You said when.
I'm still mad.
Two of their best bobblehead promotions, or promotions in general, have been both with walkers, because the Taiwan White Walker.
Yeah, that was cool.
Game of Thrones bobblehead was cool, too.
That was really cool. Well,
This Ketel Marte luchador is still one of my favorites, but
he's the only one of us on camera on Zoom right now showing the camera. Yeah, exactly. So, this is a podcast, Eric.
Listening audience.
Thought you were a podcast expert. Let's keep our eye on all these injured players we talked about: Cabrera, Gallen, Walker, Corbin Carroll, their top prospect, having season-ending surgery. We didn't even get to that today, but more to come on that in the following weeks. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Derek Montilla and Cody Fincher as well. We thank you so much for listening to the Ain't No Fang podcast here at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app.